It is time. Hey, everybody, welcome in. It is time for the 66th episode of Three Guys Before the Game. We welcome you in. This is the post-TCU edition. I'm Tony Caridi, along with the Senator Brad Howe and the Dean Hoppy Kercheval. And coming up on our show today, we recap West Virginia and TCU from back on Saturday. Might talk a little basketball. I don't want to talk basketball. I'm still horribly bothered by what happened Friday night in basketball, but
it's November. Can't be bothered by anything with basketball in November.
Oh, yeah.
Or December.
Disagree, but that's a whole nother story.
Why do you disagree?
I think these games are important right from the very beginning. People don't think so. People say that. No, I know what happened last year. I lost to Texas A&M in the opening game, and you walked away from that like you had just seen a ghost. But this one, I think, there's a whole.
You called it, by the way.
I told you. So they weren't coming to get a check. They were coming to get a win.
Well, in fairness, that was the easiest call in the world. Not that West Virginia would lose, but the spread was 11. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that was the easiest call in the world right there. Loss is a little bit surprising, but.
Oh, there's a whole nother story there. Okay, so anyway, let's go.
I'm bummed out now.
I'm desponding over that. I'm just desponding.
Got 31 more games to get it right. Yeah. Got a Hall of Fame coach sitting over there. He'll get it right.
He'll get it right. I mean, they got talent. I mean, it's the first game.
You can't teach toughness. If it's not in your DNA, if you're not tough, I don't care who's coaching them. I don't care how much they tell them. If you're not tough, you can't play the way West Virginia is designed to play.
I'm not sure I agree.
All right, here's the thing. Here's what I'm going to tell both of you. Move on, because you got West Virginia in the hunt for a college football playoff position. They're in the hunt for a Big 12 title. You got 12 months left of basketball still to play. Let's talk some football, because West Virginia is in the hunt here.
Great point.
They are. So West Virginia goes out and it lays collective wood, whatever that means. We use that a lot, right? We lay wood. They laid collective wood on the Frogs of TCU. On this very same podcast last week, we said, okay, what do you think the response will be from West Virginia after the hugely emotional game against Texas? And we all said, well, chances are human nature says they're going to be flat. And yeah, they were. Didn't score in the first quarter. They trailed 3-0, but then they went out and they scored 47 in the next three quarters of play and did it in some explosive fashion. And everyone involved, offensively, defensively, and special teams, all could kind of after the game give themselves a chest bump and say, well done. Good job.
Well, Tony, they had, as predicted, as everybody predicted, they had a flat spot but not a flat game, okay? And, I mean, the defense gave up some yards in those first two drives. The offense clearly was flat in the first quarter. But what do good teams do? They don't have a flat game. They have a flat spot. And also, if one side of the ball is not performing, the other two sides pick up the slack, and that's exactly what happened. The defense held on to TCU until the offense could get rolling. Special teams made a play, and that's what good teams do.
Yep, you're exactly right. And West Virginia has shown the ability to do what it did on Saturday all season long against teams that West Virginia is clearly better than. It has just dominated them and throttled them on both sides. So West Virginia did that again. Held TCU to -7 yards rushing. Even if you take out the sacks, it was still 23 yards rushing. So West Virginia's defense did a really nice job hanging in there, smothering TCU while the offense could get itself going. And credit special teams. We don't come on here a lot and talk about special teams unless there's been a yak somewhere. But Evan Staley getting the bounce and hitting the goalpost, having it go in early to get West Virginia on the board.
Against the wind.
47-yarder against the wind. Then that muffed kick by TCU that West Virginia fell on, I thought really changed the momentum of the game. That kind of kick-started West Virginia and led them on their roll. So credit special teams with a really impressive effort on Saturday.
You know, some people say, why do you watch sports? It's always the same thing. You know, it's always, how many times do you see a game where something for the very first time happens? You've seen a lot of football. I've seen a lot of football. Everyone's seen a lot of football. Do you ever see one hit an upright, bounce behind the crossbar, and then spike back out onto the field? You ever seen that? That's what happened. I mean, it hit the upright, and it went behind the crossbar, and as soon as it hit the ground, it spiked back out of the field, which made it look like it hit the upright and came back out onto the field. And I thought he missed it.
Yeah.
I thought it came back out of the field. It's no good. They say, no. So you see something different all the time. Evan Staley has developed into a very, very nice package. You know, Dana had full trust in his leg when the season was getting ready to go. And going into the TCU game, he had made 5 of his last 7, which included kicks of 47, 44, 45, and 44. And that is a very, very nice weapon. He goes 1 for 1 with the one we just talked about there on Saturday. And again, that was 40-plus yards. And so that is very, very important. I know you might say, well, the next 2 games that West Virginia has, you're not going to need 3s. You're going to need 7s, right? I get that part of it. But still, at the same time, those can be very helpful.
Tony, a couple of things. One is that was a tough kick with swirling winds. That was a great kick by him under those circumstances. And sometimes, again, we've talked about this a lot, if you're going to have a good year, you get a couple of those things. Now, you didn't really need it, but you need it for momentum. And I disagree with you. In these other games, you need 7s, you need 3s, you need 8s, you need 2s.
1s.
You're going to need anything you can get. Let me go back to this, how the defense played in that game, because in the first drive, TCU looked pretty good. They looked like the team that came to play, and that West Virginia was in that flat spot, like they weren't ready for. So West Virginia, in those first 2 drives by TCU, they give up 10 plays, 65 yards, 6 plays, 11 yards. But they gave up an average of 37 yards on 8 plays in those 2 drives. The remaining 13 possessions by TCU averaged 3.5 plays per drive and 11 yards per drive. Now, I know their offense is not very good, but that's still extremely difficult to pull off on 13 possessions.
It's extremely. There were some unbelievable dominating stats, and the score is one of them, 47-10. So these really just back that up. But how about the field position advantage for West Virginia? Plus 17 yards. So if you're plus 15 or more, you're going to win games 93% of the time. So
is that what your Vegas guys tell you?
That's just a stat I have for you.
Vegas guys.
I don't reveal my sources on that, but that's the number there. Here's another one for you. West Virginia, you mentioned that yards per play on those first 2 drives. How about overall? West Virginia held a 3 yard per play advantage, 6.6 to 3.3 yards per play. If you have that kind of advantage, you win 95% of the time. Yards per play, big.
That's Uncle Dana's big stat. That's the one he always talks about. His average per play is always his big stat.
So, again, that you didn't need those stats to know this was a dominating performance, but you got it from West Virginia in basically every facet.
Hey, off topic momentarily here, kind of sort of off topic. Now, before the season started, your friends in Las Vegas said 7.5 wins for West Virginia.
Yes.
And now you said...
7.5. Some people got it at 7.
7.5. And you said you were going... This is West Virginia's 8th win of the season here. So you said you were going to jump all of it. Something about your house. You're going to bet the house, just get a kid's mortgage, 529 plan, put the whole thing
in
there.
Thought it was lock of the year, didn't I?
TIAA
might
crap,
have said
whatever.
Of the year.
And all of that. So you're going to collect on that now?
Well, I can't.
Well, why is that?
Because the casinos there in Vegas refund that ticket because West Virginia didn't play its regularly number scheduled of games. So it automatically cancels the bet, except at one casino in Vegas. Didn't happen to be where my bet was placed, but one in Vegas. But you know who's happy? There's a Morgantown bettor that has 20K on the over title, on the over number. And guess where they placed that bet?
At the right place.
At the one casino that honors the bet.
So how much did he bet?
That bet, $20,000.
He laid $20,000?
Laid $20,000.
He put $20,000 that West Virginia went over 7.5.
How could you do that unless you're just incredibly wealthy? How could you do that and enjoy the season?
They're enjoying it now. They're celebrating now, Hoppy. Had a big old payoff there, Hoppy.
A big bottle of pop. Hey, so are there any odds on there? He just gets 20 grand. He gets 20?
He
just gets 20 grand. You bet 20 grand, you win another 20, so he walks with 40 and gets 20.
Pretty good hit.
Yeah, that's not bad. Anyway, we went off topic there momentarily. There's something interesting about this West Virginia team among many, many different things. Do you notice that when they tap the brakes on tempo and they do it intentionally, they just aren't the same football team, and they're doing it to help the defense so that they don't fatigue the defense and just keep running them out there? But when they go fast, they're really good, and it just seems sometimes when they go slow, it just bogs it down. Notice?
But that's a tough line to walk.
And Dana talked about it in the post game. He said, yeah, I know what we're doing, and we're doing it on purpose, not to not score, but you can't go out there. We like what we're doing with our tempo just to have that ability to go, going to go fast, going to go slow.
So that really becomes a question now for the next two games. I know we've got a whole other podcast coming Thursday to talk about Oklahoma State. That didn't matter what you did against TCU. Go fast, go slow, throw the ball backwards, do whatever you want. You're going to win that game. But that really becomes an issue in these next two when you're facing the two best offenses you faced all year and you're going to have to put points on the board, but yet you're going to need your defense to get a stop or two somewhere. So that becomes a real chess match there for Dana Holgorsen and Jake Spavital on when you press the gas and when you don't.
Well, I think if you get behind, you got to go fast.
Yeah, but what do you do if you're ahead? What do you do if you're ahead by seven points and that's a back and forth and you're seeing it's like Texas where you're having trouble stopping their offense? Then what do you do?
Well, it's
a question.
But what do you do if Oklahoma State goes up by 10 points and you say, wow, West Virginia plays better if they go fast? What if they go fast and go three and out and the defense is back on the field? I mean, there might be 160 offensive snaps. In that, I mean, potentially, that's a high number, but there could be 160 offensive snaps.
West Virginia ran 81 on Saturday. That's not inconceivable. 160.
Oh no, that could go 160 easy. You might see 100. You might see 175, 180. That could happen.
I'm sorry. I'm actually meant
180.
No, 160. No, I meant 160. I meant 160. I had trouble with 80.
That's why you're a journalism guy, not a mathematics guy. That's okay. That's perfectly fine. Trayvon Wesco's emergence continues. Did you guys catch, and now you're watching it on TV, did you catch the explosion that he had against the TCU defensive player? Could you see it on TV?
When?
West Virginia sideline. He catches one, I believe, second half. He starts rumbling up the sideline. He takes on a TCU player, and it was like an explosion. Like someone took like dust. And like there was a crop explosion, like poof, like a puff. And I saw it and I thought what it was and I said what I thought it was. And it was when he hit the kid's helmet, whatever it was, the paint just exploded off the helmet. And I'm not talking like a chip came off of the helmet. I'm talking about like 25 pieces of helmet just imploded up in the air. And so my guy, the signal caller, Jed Drenning, he said, you're absolutely right. He said, I'm standing right here. And he says, this area of the field here is just decorated with paint chips. There's just paint chips all over, white and purple paint chips. And so he puts them, he puts them in his hand and he kept them with him. And he came back upstairs and he said, dude, he said, these are the small pieces. So something happened, but the point to all of that is Wesco is playing with unbelievable confidence right now, and it has added an entirely new dimension to West Virginia's offense and a big time worry for opposing defenses. Now you got to worry about, okay, what are they going to do with the tight end? Not only is his blocking really, really good, but now they can release him. Now he can catch the ball. Now you're at, from West Virginia's perspective, now you're at where you have to be and where you need to be.
Yeah, you're really rolling now. Apparently those pages of the playbook were stolen prior to the Iowa State game. We didn't see this. Since then, we have seen it, and West Virginia's offense has become really diverse. We'll get to the running backs in a minute, but you've got a couple of those guys running hard. But look at these number of catches for the receivers. Sills with 6, Wesco 5, Jennings 5, Sims 3, Bush 2, McCoy 2 out of the backfield. Oh, mix in the other tight end, Javonte Haskins with 2. Petaway even caught one. So you're spreading that all around. You want to take Sills away? Okay, fine. Here's a couple other options. You want to take the tight end away? Fine. Here come the receivers. So West Virginia hitting its stride offensively, probably when it needs it most heading into these last two games.
And defensively, I mean, the rules favor the offensive side. Defensively, you can't stop everything. You can't stop everybody, right? It's always a gamble. It's always a cat and mouse. And West Virginia has so many weapons. They've stayed healthy offensively. And also the run game, I know one of the narratives has been, we'll settle on a guy. Well, you know what? They settled on three guys Saturday for 150, 160 yards. So What's it matter? You get 150, 160 rushing, you go with that, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't matter who's carrying the ball.
No, you're absolutely right. And again, I'm coming away impressed with both McCoy and Petaway. Now that's two straight games that they're running extremely, extremely hard. And Letty Brown got in there, and he's going to bang it up in there as well. So, yeah, we went into the season saying, can you do it by committee? And the answer is, yeah. Now, the committee chairs are Petaway and McCoy. They're kind of the lead guys. But at the same time, you've got depth, and they are healthy. Jumping over the defensive side here for West Virginia, the Mountaineers record 4 sacks on the afternoon. This against a TCU team that had allowed eight the entire season, and West Virginia got them four times, and the tackles behind the line of scrimmage equaled out to eight. So Tony Gibson's team, and as you, Brad, you've got that stat. You might as well share that stat right now. You had it on when we were on Hoppy's Coffee Clutch chatter show there about politics. Heck of a stat. The teams West Virginia has played that are really good offensively, and the teams that struggle offensively, significant differences.
So West Virginia's against the three best offenses it's faced to this point, Texas Tech, Iowa State, and Texas, they're averaging giving up 35 points per game. In the rest of the games, West Virginia just averaging 14 points a game to its opponent. So it has smothered these poor offensive teams. And again, raises a lot of questions for what you're going to see in the next couple of weeks. But West Virginia did in that game what it's done all season to these teams that just aren't really explosive offensively.
But not only not explosive, let's be candid, and don't take anything away from Tony Gibson's defense, is that those are poor offensive teams. TCU, they average like 12 first downs. They are not good offensive teams.
Well, yeah, to back you up there, you've got TCU, Tennessee, Kansas, and Kansas State. That's four opponents, all in the bottom third of total offense in the country. TCU at 90, Tennessee 114, Kansas 115, Kansas State 117. So, yeah, West Virginia's had the advantage of facing some really poor offensive teams so far.
And to its credit, though, despite the fact that TCU is struggling, that was the worst loss Gary Patterson has ever had, and the worst loss by TCU going back to the 1990s. So it was very, very significant.
Tony, let me make a point about that. We're looking at these games on a couple different levels, and one is the national perspective because of where West Virginia is. And we argued a lot Saturday about style points and those kinds of things. But I tell you, West Virginia, Saturday was chalk for the most part of the upper echelon teams.
Yes.
But West Virginia did its job. Think of this. Michigan played Rutgers. So they won 42-7. Okay, so it was like they did. I'm sure they were not enthused to play Rutgers. Alabama beat Mississippi State 24-0. Okay, Notre Dame beat Florida State 42-13. Clemson beat BC 27-7. So that was a chalk day, and West Virginia fit right into that narrative 47. In fact, better, 47-10. And then on the highlights that night, you said it was like West Virginia takes care of business. Greer gets his 350, three touchdowns. Here's a highlight.
Right.
And so you really maintained. There was no question about whether West Virginia should be where they are. So it was a good maintenance win for West Virginia nationally.
It was not only a maintenance win, but I think what it did, back to those style points, I think it got some style points in this game, because go the other way. Did Oklahoma earn style points over Oklahoma State? I mean, that's not an Oklahoma State team that is rolling in terms of national. That's a team you should beat. Oklahoma's favorite.
That was just a survival game.
But what's the national discussion right now around Oklahoma among the nation's elites?
No defense.
Can you put a one-dimensional Oklahoma State or an Oklahoma team in the playoff? That's become a discussion point because they couldn't guard anybody on Saturday. So I think Oklahoma won. They survived and advanced, but they didn't earn any style points. And I think they brought some demerits in to their case when it's inside that room. I don't know if it'll change their ranking, but that's certainly, they took a step backward from where they were the week before.
Earlier today on the Big 12 conference call, Dana Holgorsen said he thought Will Greer's performance was the best performance that he has had. When they broke down the tape, he was 25 out of 39 for 343 yards, three touchdowns with a long of 53. Thought he orchestrated as well as he has and threw it accurately as well as he has.
I tell you, he is. You talk about Wesco, and credit Wesco, who's really emerged, but also a couple of those passes he caught. Did you see? It's here it is.
Yep.
You know, the ball is right here. I mean, Greer is, I don't know how much more you can say about Greer except go see him. Right? I mean, go see him, because you only got a couple more chances. Take advantage of that. He's a once-in-a-generation guy.
Yeah, and I think he continued his march toward an invitation to New York City. He's still in the hunt.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you next. I think he's locked himself in to this point for a trip to New York City, which would be a great, great accomplishment.
I would be surprised. He would have to have a really bad performance or two, I think, to not at least earn an invite in there. And with a great performance or two, I'm not sure that's totally done yet. Tua's way out in front, I realize, but he's starting to come back to the pack a little bit, and I won't do it now, but I think you can start to begin to make a case for Greer and or Kyler Murray being more valuable to their team than what Tua is, and I could certainly make an argument that Greer is more valuable to Oklahoma than Kyler Murray, but I'll save that. I'll save that for later.
Okay, we'll save it.
I'll save it for later.
Okay, penalties from back on Saturday. We had four the entire game.
I know.
Had four penalties, two for each team.
That's I don't want to belabor. He had 40 the week before.
Well, I don't want to belabor. You know where the crew was from the Texas game?
At the Oklahoma State-Oklahoma game.
No, weren't they? They were at the Baylor game. They were at the Baylor-Iowa State game.
Oh, our crew?
Yeah, the crew that West Virginia had for the Texas game.
Yes.
Was at Baylor-Iowa State. Weren't they?
No, I think I think they did Oklahoma, Oklahoma State.
You got to look at that. I thought they were out of Baylor, Iowa State, where the fight broke out, and David Montgomery, Iowa State star running back, has to sit for the first half against Texas.
Which has big implications.
For West Virginia fans.
Absolutely.
I mean, absolutely.
So here's why, folks. If West Virginia were to win in Stillwater Saturday, and if Iowa State loses at Texas, West Virginia is locked for the Big 12 championship game, which would be a wonderful accomplishment, right? But as Brad said, David Montgomery, their leading running back who just tortured West Virginia, will not play in the first half because of the that thing got chippy, man. That thing went out, didn't it?
Those are full-on brawls.
Those are brawls. Those are absolute brawls.
I mean, the Baylor kid climbed over the official to throw a punch at David Montgomery, of which Montgomery retaliated. That got him. That got both of them run out of the game. Yeah. So they're suspended for the first half of this week's game.
Absolutely. So so that's kind of the scenario. All right. When you start to close this thing up here, a couple of notes leaving this game. West Virginia has now won 21 consecutive games when it has the halftime lead. 21 consecutive games when they lead at halftime. And Dana Holgorsen is now second all-time in career victories at West Virginia behind Don Nealon. Saturday was win number 61. He's done it in an interesting way, right?
I mean, I read that. I knew it was coming, but still you look at it and go, huh, how about that?
Yeah.
it feels
like Senator,
that.
You agree?
I do agree, and I was actually looking for my stat here that I can't find on the November success West Virginia's had over the last three seasons. You know, to add to the total win number is one thing, but it really, what do you do in November? What do you do when you're in the mix coming down the stretch? And I think I've got, what did I say on Saturday?
You cited that.
10-3. West Virginia now 10-3 over the last 3 years with two of those three losses in November coming last year without Will Grier. Mm-hmm. So that narrative around what happens in November has really changed these last three seasons.
Will Grier now 31 touchdown passes on the season. Ties him with Mark Bulger and Geno Smith for single-season touchdown passes, number three in that category. And Grier now with 25 passes completed, 457 in his Mountaineer career. He passes Rashid Marshall for number six on the all-time career completions list. Did Rashid have any reaction to this?
Did he know that he got stepped over?
In that category?
Well, we took up for our man Rashid because Fox had a graphic where they showed great quarterbacks in West Virginia history and dissed our
man
Rashid.
Didn't put him in there.
One more stat that's a companion stat to what you just said before we go. Sills and Jennings now each with double-digit touchdown receptions on the year. It happened last year as well with Sills and Caron White. So only 14 times has a West Virginia receiver had 10 or more touchdown catches in a season. There's only three guys that have done it twice. Stedman, Chris Henry, and now David Sills.
Wow.
And only four times in history have two guys had double-digit touchdown receptions, all since 2012.
Very, very good. And X-Ray Lowe had two fumble recoveries in the game. The last time one Mountaineer had two fumble recoveries in the same game, Darryl Whitmore, 1988 season, when he was a freshman, did it against Cincinnati. Last time, that's hard to do. One fumble recovery in a game is hard to do. Two fumble recoveries in a game is hard to do. So I guess we already did the basketball conversation. You guys
started out in a funk about basketball.
You guys say it's too early. Don't get worried about that.
Save it.
Yeah.
So okay. You got, like Brad said, you got 6 months to talk about basketball.
Okay, fine. I'm just...
All right. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying we'll save that conversation.
Conversation saved. Music's on. Show's over. Thanks so much for being with us, everybody. We're back on Thursday with our preview of West Virginia and Oklahoma State. Thanks so much for being with us. For Hoppy, for the Senator, Tony Caridi saying thanks for listening. Three guys before the game. You can't be paid.